Hey everyone, ready to dive deep into some mountain bike history?
Always up for a good history lesson, especially when it involves bikes.
Well, today's deep dive takes us back to the roots of the mountain bike. How did this thing we love even come about?
You know, it's funny, right? The origin story of the mountain bike doesn't start in a bike shop or a design studio.
Oh, really? Where then?
It all started on a rugged mountainside in Marin County, California.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so picture this. A steep fire road winding down Mount Tamalpais.
Steep? How are we talking, like?
Steep enough to make your heart skip a beat. Anyways, this fire road becomes the birthplace of a whole new kind of cycling. They called it repack.
Repack, like repacking your bag?
Well, not quite. See, the descent was so intense that riders would have to repack their coaster brakes with grease after every run because they'd overheat.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Intense is putting it mildly, but these guys loved it. They were a group of passionate cyclists who lived for the thrill of pushing their limits and their bikes to the absolute max. They were riding these modified bikes called clunkers.
Well, clunkers, interesting name. What were they exactly?
Basically, they were taking old Schwinn cruisers, adding gears, stronger brakes, whatever they could find to make those bikes handle the rough terrain.
It sounds a little janky, but hey, if it works, it works.
Oh, it was definitely janky, but that was part of the charm. They were constantly tinkering, experimenting, trying to find ways to improve their rides.
It's that spirit of innovation that really defines the early days of mountain biking.
Absolutely. And speaking of innovation, there's one guy we can't forget, Gary Fisher. He set a record on repack in 1976 riding a modified 1942 Schwinn Excelsior.
1942? Wow. So this is before purpose-built mountain bikes even existed.
Exactly. And get this, his record stood for years. Even as purpose-built bikes started to emerge, nobody could beat his time on that old Schwinn.
Talk about a testament to both the rider and those early bike modifications. So this brings us to the birth of the first true mountain bike ride.
You got it. A guy named Joe Breeze enters the scene. He was part of that repack community, a skilled frame builder who really understood the challenges of those trails.
Okay, so Joe Breeze, the man behind the first mountain bike.
Exactly. In 1977, he built what's considered the first true mountain bike, commissioned by a rider named Charles Kelly.
It's like witnessing history in the making. One bike, built for a specific purpose, ends up sparking a global phenomenon.
It really is incredible. And Breeze didn't stop there. He continued to refine his designs, creating the JBX1, followed by the Breezer Series 5 as 2 and 3.
So he's constantly pushing the boundaries, trying to make the bikes lighter, stronger, more capable.
That's the spirit of those early pioneers. They never settled. They were always looking for ways to improve. Each iteration of the Breezer brought advancements in gearing weight and overall performance.
It sounds like a pretty exciting time to be involved in mountain biking. You have this brand new sport emerging, and the technology is rapidly evolving.
It was a wild time, for sure. And then another legend enters the picture.
Okay, who are we talking about now?
Tom Ritchie. He was already a well-known frame builder, but in 1978, he came across Joe Breeze's JBX1, and it was like a light bulb went off.
So he saw the potential of this new breed of bicycle.
Absolutely. He dove headfirst into the world of mountain bike design. And, you know, Ritchie was already a master craftsman, known for his meticulous attention to detail and his innovative designs.
I imagine his experience building road bikes came in handy.
Oh, for sure. He used a technique called fillet brazing to create these incredibly strong and lightweight frames. And then there were his iconic bull moose handlebars.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those. Super strong, kind of retro cool looking.
Right. They were designed specifically for off-road riding, providing more strength and control on those rough trails.
But it wasn't just about the frames, right? All the components, the tires, the brakes, those had to evolve too.
Oh yeah, for sure. The evolution of mountain biking was about constantly refining every single part of the bike, from the frame to the smallest component.
So let's talk about some of those key component innovations. Where do we even begin?
Well, tires were a huge factor. You needed something that could handle the rough terrain and provide grip, but early tires were heavy, like the Uniroyal Knobby and the Carlisle Stud. Then a much lighter tire emerged, the CyclePro Snake Belly. It made a huge difference in performance.
So lighter tires making the bikes faster and more agile. What about gears?
Gears were essential. Early mountain bikes used derailleurs borrowed from road bikes, but they weren't ideal. Then in 1982, Suntour introduced the first mountain bike specific derailleur, the Mountec.
dedicated mountain bike components starting to emerge. That's a big step.
It was, but the Mountec had some durability issues. Shimano really changed the game when they came out with the Dewar XT group set. It was strong, reliable, and became the standard for off-road riding.
So the mountain bike is evolving, the components are getting better, but what about the companies building these bikes?
It was an explosion of creativity. You had Specialized, Univega, Lawwheel Knight, Schwinn, all these companies bringing their own ideas to the table.
Like the Wild West of mountain biking.
Exactly. Everyone was trying to push the boundaries and come up with the next big innovation. And Specialized really hit it big with the Stump Jumper in 1981.
Oh yeah, the Stump Jumper. I've heard of that one. It's pretty iconic.
It became hugely popular and helped bring mountain biking into the mainstream. But, you know, even before the mountain bike, as we know it came along, there were other bikes and riding styles that kind of foreshadowed its emergence.
Really? Tell me more about that.
Well, think about cyclocross bikes. They'd been around since the early 1900s, designed for racing on a mixed terrain, over obstacles and everything.
So the idea of riding bikes off-road wasn't brand new.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And back in the 1950s, there was this French group, the Vélocross Club Parisien. They were modifying road bikes for off-road riding, adding things like front suspension and thumb shifters, way ahead of their time.
Wow, front suspension in the 50s, that's wild.
And in Britain, you had the Rough Stuff Fellowship. They'd been exploring back roads and trails since the 1950s, embracing adventure and self-sufficiency. It's like that urge to explore and challenge ourselves on two wheels has always been there.
Yeah, there's something about getting out there, pushing your limits, connecting with nature. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Absolutely. And the mountain bike, as it emerged in Marin County, took all those different threads of innovation and wove them together into something completely new and exciting. It was the perfect storm for this incredible sport to explode onto the scene.
And explode it did.
Yeah.
But we're just getting started with this story.
And explode it did. It's incredible how fast things took off from there. Mountain biking was gaining momentum. Innovation was just, well, accelerating. Everyone wanted lighter, stronger, more efficient parts. Every new tweak pushed what you could do on the trails further. Even something like pedals, you know?
Pedals, yeah. Can't imagine trying to, like, blast downhill with my feet stuck in toe clips. What did they even use back then?
At first, same toe clips and straps road cyclists had, which, yeah, not ideal off-road. Imagine needing to put your foot down quick, or those super technical bits.
Sketchy doesn't even cover it. When did those clipless pedals come in?
Shimano, they came out with the SPD in 1990. Game changer, seriously. Small cleats on your shoe, clip in, clip out, easy. Way safer, more control on the trails, night and day.
Ah, so that's where those came from. See them on pretty much every mountain bike these days. What else was getting upgraded around that time?
Suspension, that was huge. Early front suspension, clunky, not reliable, you know the drill. Then, 89, RockShox releases the RS1. Totally different story. Lightweight, it worked. Made riding rough stuff so much smoother, controllable.
It must have been a relief for anyone getting pummeled on those bumpy trails before that.
Yeah.
What about rear suspension? Was that happening at the same time?
Took a bit longer for that to catch on. Early attempts, interesting, but Skinner Descender, back in 83, that one's wild. Built for downhill, used a motorcycle shock for rear suspension.
Whoa, already thinking full suspension that early on. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Shows you how much those early guys were pushing the envelope. Couple years later, 85, the Schuler Victor, another rear suspension bike, but just springs, no dampening. Then 88, Moulton, British company, puts out the AMATB, full suspension, leading link front fork, elastomer rear, one of the first mass produced, although only a few hundred made ever.
So the seeds were there for the full suspension bikes we have now. What were some of the other early models that really, like, made a splash?
90, off-road comes out with the ProFlex RF1. A lot of folks consider that the first widely available full suspension mountain bike, single pivot rear suspension, elastomers to soak up the bumps. Same time, the Boulder Bikes Gazelle, that one was innovative, had a remote lockout for the rear shock.
Full suspension is getting more common now. Didn't it like go through a weird phase in the late 90s there? What happened?
Yeah, kind of lost its way for a bit there. Rear suspension design all over the place, lots of experimenting, not all of it great. Some designs overly complex, heavy, or just broke all the time.
So figuring things out the hard way sometimes. But I'm guessing some of those designs influenced the bikes we ride today, right?
Definitely. AMP Research in 93, they came out with the B2. That's where the horse link suspension comes from. Four-bar linkage, still used a lot today. Great pedaling efficiency, smooth ride.
Horse link, I've heard that name. So that's the origin story. What other designs from back then made a, like, lasting impact?
Same era, Yeti Cycles. They released the ARC Ace LT, high-performance race bike, single-pivot rear suspension, mix of Manitou and RockShox shocks. And then 95 Ibis Cycles, they came out with the Sosbo. That one had the unified rear triangle suspension, URT. Didn't it get super popular, but shows how creative everyone was back then.
Sounds like those early builders weren't afraid to try anything, push the limits. This evolution wasn't just suspension though, right? Frame materials must have played a big part too. Steel for a long time. But in the 80s, things started to change.
Big time. Aluminum started becoming popular. Lighter, stiffer frames. Cannondale. They were already using it for road bikes, one of the first to go all in on aluminum for mountain bikes. Their SM500 came out in 84, one of the first mass-produced aluminum mountain bikes.
So Cannondale was at the forefront of aluminum. Did other companies follow their lead?
Oh, yeah. They caught on quick. Klein Bikes, they were another big aluminum fan, built some really iconic bikes, those oversized tubes, bright colors, the whole nine yards. Steelmakers had to up their game, too. Lighter, stronger alloys to keep up.
Back and forth, always trying to create the best possible ride.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just aluminum and steel, right? Were there other materials in the mix?
A few others, yeah. Titanium, late 80s, early 90s, it starts popping up. Amazing strength to weight ratio, no rusting, great stuff. But pricey, hard to work with, so mostly high-end bikes.
Can't forget about carbon fiber, pretty much the gold standard for high-performance bikes now.
Yeah.
When did that show up in the mountain bike world?
Carbon fiber, interesting story, actually. Kestrel, they were known for using composites in cool ways. Back in 88, they actually built a full suspension carbon fiber mountain bike prototype. The Nitro even had a prototype RockShox fork, mass production though. That took a while.
1988, that's so early for a carbon fiber mountain bike. What took so long for it to, like, take off?
Early days, carbon fiber was super expensive and making it was still being figured out. Plus, people weren't sure how tough it'd be off-road. Technology got better, prices came down, it slowly became more accepted. Late 90s, early 2000s, you start seeing it more on higher end bikes.
Frames, suspension, pedals, tires, materials. Mind blowing how much has gone into the mountain bike. But we haven't talked about brakes yet. Early bikes used cantilever brakes. I bet those weren't great for steep descents and technical trails, huh?
Not really, no. Cantilevers, okay for road riding, but not enough stopping power for off-road, not by a long shot. And forget about modulation, plus they got clogged with mud and junk. Dangerous, really.
Yeah, it's not a recipe for a good time. So what was the solution? When did disc brakes arrive?
You might be surprised. Disc brakes. Been around for a while. Even some department store bikes in the 70s had them. But heavy, unreliable, nobody took them seriously. Early 80s, though, mountain cross racing, those guys. Always ahead of the curve, they put a disc brake on the rear wheel of their Skinner Descender. Sign of things to come, for sure.
Mountain cross racing, always pushing the limits. So when did disc brakes become the standard on mountain bikes?
1989, Mountain Cycle, they were known for innovative suspension, came out with the ProStop, cable-actuated hydraulic disc brake made for mountain bikes. Way better stopping power, modulation, blew cantilevers out of the water. Other companies followed suit, mid-90s disc brakes on most high-end bikes.
Another mountain bike revolution. Amazing how far we've come from those clunkers to the high-tech bikes today. Comes back to that same spirit of innovation, that adventurous spirit that drove those early pioneers.
You said it, and it's not going anywhere. Riders, manufacturers, always pushing, always exploring, never gonna stop.
It's more than just the tech too, right? The community, the passion, that connection to nature.
Totally agree. Mountain biking, it's more than just a sport. It's a way of life, a community, a connection to the outdoors. That spirit of adventure, that pure joy of riding, that's what keeps it going. As long as we have that, the future of mountain biking is bright. It's a bright future, that's for sure. And it's going to keep changing. Like, we're already seeing wider tires for grip and stability, longer, slacker geometry, handles better on those descents, and suspension. Don't even get me started. The stuff they're doing now, it's like magic, adapting to any terrain.
Always something new. And e-bikes, can't leave those out.
Uh-huh.
You're getting huge, bringing a whole new crowd into mountain biking.
Right. E-bikes, they're changing the game. Doesn't matter your fitness level. You can get out there, explore further, tougher trails than ever. And the tech, batteries, motors, it's only going to get better. E-bikes are here to stay.
Exciting times to be a mountain biker. But it's not just the tech, right? It's the people, the love of riding, that connection to nature, being out there.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Mountain biking, more than just a sport, it's a lifestyle, a community. You get out there, you're part of something bigger.
So, think about that. We've gone from those janky clunkers to the incredible bikes we have now. But it's not about the parts list, the latest and greatest. It's about the ride itself. Getting out there, exploring, feeling that freedom, the joy. That's what mountain biking's all about.
Exactly. And every time you're on the trail, you're part of that story. Who knows what's next? What crazy innovations, what adventures are waiting?
That's the beauty of it. You never know what's around the bend. So keep that stoke high, keep exploring, keep riding. Happy trails, everyone.